Mighty 990 Broadcast Center, it's time to wake up Memphis.
Good morning, Memphis, and welcome to the morning show. You know, it feels like one of those spring days. Do you guys remember as kids in elementary school? So the first day of spring, or the first day rather that it feels like spring. Maybe I'm talking to an empty room because I feel like spring is very premature in the Mid-South. Whereas in Pennsylvania, where I grew up, it would still be snowing sometimes. I mean, it was just insane how long the winters lasted. But then you got the first day of spring and the birds are chirping. There's a warm, balmy breeze in the air and you got out early for recess. Like the teachers had some generosity in their hearts, some mercy, and let the kids go play on the playground because it was just so nice and we had been cooped up in classrooms and school buildings for far too long throughout the winter months. That's what it feels like when you walk outside this morning. All of that to say, oh God, we do have some isolated strong storms possible today throughout Thursday, but we'll start with just cloudy conditions all throughout the morning. So potential spotty showers as you head out this morning, but keep an eye on that storm that will move through the area later this afternoon. They're not saying it's bad. It's just going to be really windy. So we'll give you the latest and follow up on the weather. So I have a couple different things I want to say in advancing the story about the man that shot the cop, because the more you know, and we've got to call this 18-year-old the man, and we've got to call him a monster, because very interesting how even people like Tammy Sawyer framing this as just a kid that was failed by the system. Paul Young, our mayor, this was a kid. We've got to do more. No, he wasn't a kid. I don't even care if he was a kid. If he was 14 and shot a cop, he's a murderer. He's an awful, awful person. So anyways, we learned that the 17-year-old, we focus a lot on the 18-year-old that shot the cop and was murdered, or was killed rather. He was obviously in and out of the criminal justice system multiple times as a juvenile. It wasn't just a month ago. Those court documents were revealed yesterday. But then also, it was the 17-year-old, the accomplice of the crime, that turns out also was in and out of our juvenile court system. 2023, a bad year for the 17-year-old who we don't have any information on, really, because he is a kid. Like, legally, he's a 17-year-old. We don't know his name. We don't know his face. And I'm okay with that. Just tell me that he's not going to be released back out of the hospital and onto our streets. That's all I really care about in this case. So anyways, the local media, including yours truly, we're trying to get to the bottom of how not only did you release the 18-year-old that would murder this Memphis cop 1 month ago, but also you knew about the 17-year-old accomplice in 2023. Aggravated robbery for both of them. Aggravated, for those that are not familiar with legal jargon, is violent. Okay, so these are not, and it's so interesting with the whole bail calculator. This is under the new bail program that was rolled out by our Softy district attorney, and all of these judges, Judge Bill Anderson, who oversees all of these soft commissioners that are not elected, and we know they're like the mafia, these judicial commissioners. We have no idea who they are. Do you know a judicial commissioner? Because if you do, find them and tell me about them. Much like this Chris Ingram, he was the judicial commissioner that ultimately signed off on the release of the 18-year-old cop killer. So that needs to be changed ASAP. So Judge Bill Anderson, we reached out to him. He responded to a text message I sent last night, said he's not doing any press. The press on this has been a botch job and is getting all sorts of hell on how the media is covering this story. So then he then doubles down on supporting the judicial system that turned out this criminal back onto our streets. Excuse me. So anyways, WREG caught up with him. They were able to get a phoner. And we're working on that, but who knows? He knows our stance, and he knows that he is complicit in this. He really is. And when you hear the words that he tells the TV stations, he's doubling down. He's not, you know, recusing himself, washing the blood off his hands, saying, whoops. No, he's saying this was actually a good system and the judicial commissioner did a very good thing and it was appropriate. Take a listen in Cut 18.
Judge Bill Anderson, who has supervised all judicial commissioners and sat down with us last June to talk about their work, told us by phone today Judicial Commissioner Ingram followed the law.
All that's sitting in front of the commissioner is that he admitted to stealing the cars. Well, okay, maybe he did, but maybe he didn't. Maybe he did under coercion. That's all to be considered in the future. But yes, that is one of the considerations in setting bail.
One among many things commissioners weigh.
At the end of the day, it was his personal decision, not personal thoughts, his personal decision based on weighing all the factors in front of him that recognizance release with conditions was appropriate.
Would you have made that decision as a judge?
Don't know. What in my case?
I understand he wants to split hairs, but that was such an easy response, or should have been a very simple answer to that WREG reporter. No, I think the judicial commissioner got this one wrong, right? There's a cop that no longer will, or there's a family in town that no longer has a husband and a dad, all right? This Joseph McKinney fallen officer was a young dad and a young husband. So in light of all of that, you would think the simple response would be, you know, maybe we whoopsied on that one. We're still going to defend the new woke bail program in Shelby County. But no, I don't think this was the right call. Nope. He then blames the guns on the GOP. This is why we will not escape any of this until all of these crooked judges are removed from the bench. And I hope that the state is looking at Judge Bill Anderson today, because you can discipline judges. We've seen Senator Brent Taylor do it. Concerning Bill Anderson's remarks on how much he hates bail. So isn't any wonder that we're here? So here is Judge Bill Anderson pointing the finger at the easy access that the 18-year-old had to guns. Cut 17.
But Anderson says there is a lot of blame to go around that has nothing to do with the courts.
It's open season. 18, they don't. That's what happened. There's where the blame is. The legislature, it needs to change, make some changes so that these 18-year-old kids can have that easy access to weapons.
Like, shut the up, okay? I'm over it with these soft, weak, beta judges, but specifically Bill Anderson. Come on. That's what we need to fix? The state legislation to make guns more difficult to purchase because somehow that is going to solve the problems in our broken criminal justice system, specifically with your new bail reform program, because that makes all of the sense in the world, you idiot. So thank God for Brent Taylor. In comes the superhero of Shelby County, is what we're going to call him. Because the reporter then got on the senator and asked him, well, do you think that's true? Do we actually maybe start banning guns? Because according to the top dog of our judgeships in the city of Memphis and Shelby County, it is the guns. And here's how the senator responded. It's wonderful. Enjoy, everyone. Cut 15.
You could pass all the gun restrictions that you want, and you could take guns out of law-abiding citizens' hands, and it will do nothing to remove the guns from criminals who want to use them for evil purposes.
But Taylor is weighing a law to get rid of judicial judges altogether in Shelby County.
Good.
Will that even make the process even more backlogged?
Well, it would require the judges actually to get off their and go to work.
He says a study shows the county is overjudged, and having judges take on the work judicial commissioners do may be better.
Decisions like these are life and death decisions, and they need to be made by people who are accountable to the electorate.
So well said. He's exactly right. And I am calling, though I have no authority to make this proclamation at 7:14 from our broadcast center in East Memphis. The judicial system that allows unelected people that we have no idea their names, who they represent, their political affiliation. I'm talking about these judicial judges, also known as judicial commissioners, all need to be fired. And that program needs to be abolished. Back in the day, actually, if you look at the records, at one point, even for bail consideration, it was in front of a judge that was elected by the people. The people had the say over their representation, and the representation was sitting there with a gavel and a rope. That's not the case anymore. We have no say over who the Shelby County Commission is appointing. That needs to change ASAP, and I've got a lot more to say. We have a little bit more time. So anyhow, to wrap this all up and put a pin in it, the district attorney has been throwing the judge and the judicial commissioners under the bus. It's their fault. We actually asked that the 18-year-old was not released on his own recognizance. Well, it turns out that now Judge Bill Anderson is blaming the district attorney, because while it is true that D.A. Steve Mulroy did in fact ask that the kid not be released, he didn't ask for the bond to be increased. I think we need to make that very clear. Again, this is a district attorney that ran on a campaign of everything that just unfolded in the last month. So take a listen to this in cut number. This is cut number, looking here on 16.
Judge Anderson also says the district attorney could have pushed stronger for a higher bond at each phase of Lobley's court hearings. Steve Mulroy's office says they didn't request a higher bond for Lobley, but they did argue against him being released on his own recognizance. And their push to have him tried federally came after his hearing, so the judge would not have known about that when he considered bond.
He had no prior criminal record that was in the paperwork in his court jacket. Police officer may have said, we know this kid from the neighborhood. We've arrested him 10 times as a juvenile. Well, I'm sorry. We can't consider that.
Okay, so you can't consider whether, when you're determining if you're going to give bail to a defendant, we can't consider their financial status and their skin color, because that is the narrative, is that our bail system discriminates against blacks in the city of Memphis. So we can't look at their financial status, or we do want to look at their financial status. We do want to look at their skin color. It's so weird. It's like they are trying to create a DEI bail system. But we will not look at whether the police that police the streets and the neighborhoods that had their eyes on this young man said he was violent or not. We can't do that, because when he's an 18-year-old, we can't look at his juvenile record, and he's now an adult. But what needs to be fixed are gun laws, according to the judge. Now, I'll throw it out to our listeners this morning. Do you not see the big old issue there? All right, like, you're 17, you have a birthday, and then boom, apparently these judicial commissioners cannot take into account everything that the now 18-year-old did when he was 17, 15, 16, so on and so forth. We're stupid if we don't think that's a problem that needs to be fixed ASAP, but I'll throw it out to you. The judge says it is the guns, and he's applauding the criminal court system and saying, we got this one right. Even though there's a dead cop this morning, we did a good job. And I would probably do the same thing. It's not funny. It's just parody, because here we are, 901-260-5926. And I don't know that we get out of this one. 901-260-5926. So on the other side of the break, protests all across America. They pulled a Memphis, where they commandeered the I-40 bridge, shut it down for like 4 hours. So they did that in California. shut down travel for folks going to O'Hare in Chicago. Also, big protests in Philadelphia. And even here in the Mid-South, we had one in Cooper Young that got a little rowdy. We'll have those stories on the other side. Don't go away. And welcome back to the morning show. Chaos across the country, as you can hear that. So, massive protests. And no, we're not talking about California or Chicago. That was in Cooper Young. Surprise. So, there was a big protest yesterday. And this one actually did not include the Hamas people, like the intersectionality situation we have here, where like Tammy Sawyer puts on a hijab. Okay, because Black Lives Matter has now also turned into Hamas Lives Matter. Yeah, I also found it very interesting that the same people screaming for ceasefire, ceasefire, we need world peace, were absolutely zipping their lips when Iran was bombing or attempting to Israel. They weren't calling for no ceasefire. There was nothing coming out there. So anyways, so this was not about the Gaza war between Israel and Hamas and now Iran, because the Middle East is imploding. This was actually about immigrants being upset with Governor Bill Lee and Republicans. So it's against the protest was against a new law requiring police to report undocumented immigrants. Basically, they'd have to pick the phone and call ICE. And if they're here illegally, are they deported? That's the question. So there was a reporter that was there and said she's never seen quite a protest like this. She said police vehicles are trying to force protesters off the roads and onto the sidewalks because they commandeered the heartbeat of the woke community, Cooper Young. Mecca for communists. Except they have that beautiful, what is it, the rainbow thing that they rolled out. And that is like the center point of that city. So anyhow, I'm reading a statement by the organizers of said protest, because I frankly really don't understand why this is controversial. Like, if you're here in the country illegally, we should know that before you have even eaten your first meal. Like, stop. So anyways, it's House Bill 2124. They say it would require all new law or require all police, excuse me, in the state to report any undocumented immigrants they come across. Why is that problematic? Why is that wrong? Members of the Tennessee Immigrant and Refugee Rights Coalition, they were the folks leading the protest. And they basically said Governor Bill Lee had a clear choice. He could have listened to the warnings from police chief, educators, domestic violent victim advocates, and legal experts and stopped this misguided bill from becoming law. So it became a law. It will take place on July 1st. Instead, he rubber stamped the state's legislature, continued descent into authoritarianism, and greenlit a law that could open the door for racial profiling. Of course, this goes back to race. Unlawful detention and separated families. No, stop. This is all so dumb. But we know the strength and resilience of not reading the rest of this statement. Okay. So that's what you need to know. Because I guess the new roles of activism in this country is we don't just go to City Hall anymore and stand out there with our big cardboard signs. And then we look like idiots. You're allowed to do that because you have the First Amendment right. You have the right to protest and peacefully assemble. Keyword is peaceful. And now peaceful is not blocking traffic. Like, you can't do that. And there's now laws that prohibit that. But that wasn't stopping these radical Hamas supporters in Chicago. We have some audio of them. Think about the rush to the airport. I mean, everybody's been there. Even if you do arrive 2 hours early, you're always a little bit anxious that something's going to happen with maybe the itinerary. Maybe you're not allowed to get your shampoo through TSA checkpoint, and you're going to have to throw out that bottle of shampoo you just bought. It's all so stressful. So imagine you're trying to get to your airport to catch your flight, and you are unable to do so. Well, because Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th and slaughtered Israeli people. I can't even imagine how angry I would be. So what people started doing was they actually just ditched their cars and they started walking like it was a pilgrimage to O'Hare. Here's some of that soundbite. Cut three.
I'm telling you, they closed down the whole street. Everyone has to walk to the airport. What are they doing?
I heard enough. So anyways, it was like 14 people. It wasn't even like that many Hamas supporters, but it doesn't take a lot. I know in, what was it? The Bay Area where they shut down, was this the Golden Gate Bridge? Yes. They shut it down for 5 hours and there were only like 10 protesters, but they cemented their hands on like people's cars. No, I'm not making this up. Listen to Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton on Fox. Here's what he had to say. Cut 25.
If something like this happened in Arkansas on a bridge there, let's just say I think there'd be a lot of very wet criminals that have been tossed overboard, not by law enforcement, but by the people whose road they're blocking. If they glued their hands to a car or the pavement, well, probably pretty painful to have their skin ripped off. But I think that's the way we'd handle it in Arkansas. And I would encourage most people anywhere that get stuck behind criminals like this who are trying to block traffic to take matters in their own hands. It's time to put an end to this nonsense.
So, of course, the left ran with that headline. Arkansas Senator Tom Cotton calls for violence. Oh, stop it. I'm going to hit the gas pedal. Yep, absolutely. If you are standing between me and my departing flight out of Memphis International, you pull that crap, I will absolutely pretend that it is a game of bumper cars. You will go up against my bumper. And honestly, I've seen some of the weight of some of these protesters. I'd probably lose, probably demolish my vehicle. But I'd still try because this is not normal. This is now becoming mainstream as a form of democracy. This isn't it. This isn't it. Senator Marsha Blackburn had the following to say. We'll scoot to break. These radical anti-Israel protesters are endangering the safety of Americans while spewing their anti-Semitic rhetoric. Absolutely disgusting. Could not agree with the senator more. Okay, so more on the other side. I'm going to get to some of your comments. On deck, Representative Mark White is going to join the show at the top of the 8. Also, Lane Provine, a political consultant, is going to be joining the show as well at 8:35. Stand by. And welcome back to the morning show. So we've got a lot coming up in this segment. We're going to hit the first day of the Trump trial in Manhattan. And they were going through the jury selection yesterday. And the majority of the jurors, the potential jurors, were ineligible. Why? Well, because they were biased against the former president of the United States. Is anybody shocked by that when you look at Manhattan that voted over 80% for Joe Biden? I'm not. I'm not at all. But first, I did want to mention this because this kind of cracked me up. Social media is erupting after CBS cut into the feed of Billy Joel singing Piano Man. So I know a lot of our listeners were railing Channel 3. Just so upset about the fact that they cut out of the concert, which was at the Madison Square Garden. It was his 100th concert, so it was like a big deal. They aptly titled the special the 100th Billy Joel at Madison Square Garden. It started at 9 p.m., and in that case, it would have been 8 p.m. Central on Sunday evening. Unfortunately, while he was in the middle of his favorite, most iconic song, Piano Man, it closed out and went to the local newscast. And we've got the audio because it's kind of funny. Cut 20. And the piano sounds like a carnival. And the microphone smells like a beer.
Live from CBS 4, this is your news now.
So it goes right. So in the case of Memphis, it would have went right to WREG because they are a CBS affiliate. So anyways, a lot of people were really angry at news directors all across the country and immediately picked up the phone to blast them for cutting the concert short. All right. So this story, before we get to the Trump case, which makes me so angry. And when you hear what the jurors that came into the courtroom yesterday, they were giggling like little schoolgirls, the Daily Mail reporting, getting on their tiptoes to look at President Trump. Right. They're all clamoring because they know if they can be a juror in this historic first case where they try an American president, they'll grab a book deal. They'll also be able to make the rounds on CNN. It's absolutely disgusting. So anyways, naturally, the defense, when they're picking a juror, because a juror ultimately and the jurors that deliberate President Trump's justice make or break for this case. It really could be the make or break for the election, genuinely. I hear the argument that a lot of people are making that if they convict the former president, Americans are waking up and they realize this is a witch hunt and this is a hoax. This is what a political witch hunt looks like. This is what they do in countries that are not democracies, countries that we declare wars on and we try to build democracies. And that's happening here in the United States. And they say the argument is that Americans believe right and can see right through this stuff. I don't know about that, to be honest, because there are so many what they call miseducated, aka dumb voters in this country, that all they'll see is convicted Trump. And I know that personally because I will sometimes talk about the case on other alternative social media platforms like Instagram, Snapchat, and they freak out when I say I'm a Trump guy. And it's not because Trump was mean to illegals, Trump was mean to the gays. It was because Trump has 93 felony charges, though not felony charges, not all of them are, but that's been even reduced to like some 80. They just go straight to, you'll really elect a criminal to go to the Oval Office? That's like their go-to thing now. And I know Gen Z is kind of dumb and miseducated, but they speak for a lot of people that are just dumb and miseducated, if you get my point. See, I'm no fan of this, what's happening, and I don't think our listeners are either. I just would push back on this is going to make Trump clinch the election in November by 40 points. Now, so anyways, looking at the juror selection yesterday, so it was 50 of the first 96 jurors that were potentially going to weigh in on the president's case. Well, 50 of those were dismissed after they admitted that they cannot be impartial. Now, I think it's kind of funny, and I'll throw it out to our listeners. Say you are defending President Trump. What type of juror are you going to want to boot? And which juror are you going to want to keep? Now, if I was a defending attorney for President Trump, anybody with a gauge in their ear, I would throw out of the case. They're not deliberating justice. If you got pink hair, hell no. If you look like, I don't know, Tammy Sawyer, you're also not on this case. Nope. I am going to look for anybody that is hardworking, maybe a blue collar dude that builds skyscrapers in Manhattan. I'm going to look at him. Maybe a business guy, maybe a Chad from Wall Street. I'm going to look at him. But people that look like Rachel Maddow from MSNBC, they can't deliberate this thing. So anyways, they had a couple, they were faced with 42 questions. So how it would work is you would have the prosecutors and then the defense attorneys. So they're asking 42 questions, including what news networks they watched and whether they have supported QAnon. What on earth is that question? Whatever. So do you believe in Pizzagate? I guess was one of the questions. And it's absolutely critical that they get this right because their job and the president is afforded an impartial jury. But everybody knows who President Trump is, unless you're hiding under a rock. And in that case, I would probably pick that juror. So anyways, according to the Daily Mail, I'm going to read through some of this because I found it fascinating. One of the questions was, do you have any strong opinions or firmly held beliefs about former President Donald Trump or the fact that he is a current candidate for president that would interfere with your ability to be fair and an impartial juror? Earlier, the woman that was asked that question had sparked laughter in court when she said that her favorite pastimes included going to the club and shopping. Another female was excused after she admitted she couldn't be impartial and said, I just couldn't do it, and walked out. One man said that he could not do it because it would avoid with his daughter's wedding on June 8th. One woman said she worked in venture capital, had no kids, and read the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, and watched CNN. They booted her from being a potential juror. Another man said he was a creative director at a fashion-y company, and Trump's defense attorneys said no. Another dude said he was married with children, like playing with his dog, and read the New York Times, USA Today, and watched CNN. Once again, Trump's defense attorneys said you're not on the case. A third juror said she followed Trump on social media, but read the New York Times and watched CNN. Do you understand how difficult this is going to be? Not only difficult, impossible to get a fair, impartial jury. But they don't want an impartial jury because that's why they're having it in Manhattan. That's why they're having it in Washington, D.C. The defense asked to take it to Staten Island, and they said no. Of course they didn't say no. Of course they said no, because the judge hates Trump. A couple more kind of funny. One said, or according to the Daily Mail, one woman in the second row from the back on the right giggled and put her hand over her mouth, looking at the person seated next to her with raised eyebrows when the president was walked into the courtroom. Many prospective jurors sat in the back rows and stretched their necks to get a good look at Trump once in their seats. President Trump is an innocent man. And what they're doing to the president is a disgrace, not only to America, but it is mocking our judicial system. This is court TV, though I find it interesting they're not allowing any TV cameras inside the court building, because I don't think they could, because I think Americans would see what a hack job this judge is. Meanwhile, the soft on crime district attorney, Alvin Bragg, that brought this case forward and ran on a campaign that he was going to throw Trump in prison. Keep in mind, the past two district attorneys in Manhattan had this case. They could have prosecuted President Trump, said there was nothing there. 2 week of a case. Also, statute of limitations. We're not taking it. Not Alvin Bragg, because guess what? He's an incumbent and he's up for re-election next year. And guess what? He already raised a whopping $850,000 in campaign donations after the Trump indictment. It's terrible. It's absolutely awful. And then you look at what they're doing down at our southern border. And I know that's a weird pivot, but if you think that this election coming up in 2024, we are only 202 days away from November 5th. If you think this thing is going to be fair and free, you are mistaken. And if that calls me, if that makes me an election denier, well, then so be it. So be it. Got a story in front of my eyes. You've got illegals getting these pamphlets in Mexico to vote for President Biden. It's an NGO, this story found by the Heritage Foundation and their oversight project. You've got this NGO based in northeastern Mexico that lobbies U.S. lawmakers. It also has the backing and support of the Open Society Project. That's George Soros. All right, him, the same guy that's in the pocket and funded D.A. Alvin Bragg's campaign, as well as our own right here in Memphis, D.A. Steve Mulroy, is funneling money into this NGO. Well, it turns out that the NGO is handing these pamphlets to these illegals. And on the illegal pamphlets to the illegals, when it's translated from Spanish into English, well, here is what it says. Reminder, to vote for President Biden when you are in the United States. We need another 4 years of his term to stay open. And that is why today that border is wide open because they are absolutely breaching our national security just to keep one man in power. That's what this comes down to. And you got Mike Johnson trying to bring legislation that would ban illegals from voting legally. All right, they have to have a voter ID card. They've got to have an ID to vote. And every Democrat in the House and Senate is adamantly against it. Tell me why that is. Tell me why that is. I'm on a roar, and we've got to cut to break. Number is 901-260-5926. 901-260-5926. It's just all a mess, and it's scary. It's scary times we're living in. We've got 202 days to work together to get this thing right. All right, we'll be right back.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life. Talk to your doctor about creating a plan that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
The Mighty 990 AM and online at mighty990.com. KWAM.
And welcome back to the morning show. Want to get to some of your comments this morning? 7:50 and wonderfully warm outside this morning. We are expecting some thunderstorms later this afternoon. So Dean writes, I'm done being nice as well, Ben. I hope that the same fate happens to Bill Anderson by someone he or his commissioners releases. That's a strong take, Dean, but I'm going to stop it. Let's just protest. And we protest, A, by voting. Mind you, the Republican Party in Shelby County told all of us, if you want your bona fides as Republicans, you must vote for Judge Bill Anderson. And that is why I question whether I'm a Republican. Maybe I am a Republican, and maybe they're just Democrats. Could be. I've got more to say about that, but I want to read through. Patsy writes, here's a list of 14 judicial commissioners. Patsy did what I could not do, which was know all of the commissioners. Now, I could have looked it up, but we have the smartest audience in the Mid-South, and I love them. Thank you, Patsy. Another writes, having an automatic weapon is a federal charge, period. So, right, absolutely. But let's double down and push for more gun laws, because that would have stopped the cop killer from being released out of jail. Do you see how this works? It doesn't, because it's illogical. Mindy writes, don't care. He didn't have a criminal past. He murdered someone. He murdered a police officer, Judge Bill Anderson. Mindy is so right. She says, not being able to use the charges as a juvenile, that is ludicrous. I've always thought that was so, so wrong. Patsy writing maybe the most critical question this morning. How do these people sleep at night? That is, do you think that sometimes? I do. When you look at some of our quote unquote leaders in this city and what they're pushing for, where a city has already seen over 110 homicides to date this year. How do these people sleep at night? No idea. I don't know that they do. Or maybe they just don't have souls. Or maybe, Patsy, they are also criminals. And they are out doing the drag racing at 3 o'clock in the morning. I mean, it might be a far stretch, but who knows? And they're not sleeping at all. Dana writes, I pity the protester blocking me on my way anywhere in my car. Two words, bear spray. Even better when their arms are locked together. Yeah, so at O'Hare, Dana, the airport in Chicago, they had used a pipeline, a PVC pipe, and they were all hanging on to it as though that was a sign of plastic solidarity. Excuse me. And then a lot of people just saying they agree with folks saying you cannot protest and obstruct traffic. No, absolutely agree with you. So I have two stories for you. I'm going to try to rip through as many as I can. You guys remember the serial plagiarist, otherwise known as former president of Harvard, Claudine Gay? Well, we know that she was going to continue being tenured, not as the president, but they were going to keep her at Harvard. They assured her that she would remain employed for a salary of around $900,000 a year as an administrator. Well, this week, they announced what her role, since stepping down as the president, would be. Ironically, and this is not a Babylon Bee headline, she is going to assume the teaching role at a graduate level of reading and research at Harvard. Research? The same woman that stole other people's research and put her name on it? That is called plagiarism. And to call out Claudine Gay, who is a black woman, for that is not racist, because that was the attack. Because plagiarism and calling folks out for plagiarism became a white supremacist attack. Do you remember when all of this went down? Okay, so not only that, the grading for this course is not going to be a letter grade. You can't get an A, you can't get an A minus, you can't get a B. No letter grades. I'm putting in this grading system according to Harvard because it disproportionately favors white students. Grades are now racist. That is so racist. That is racist to black students that Harvard administrators don't believe can get an A. And only white kids can get A's and B's. And the black students and minority students are getting C's. So we've got to get rid of grading systems and grades, because that will right the wrong of the disparate impact in the grading system. That is actual racism towards black students. If I'm a black student and I hear that, I am going to be protesting Harvard for that racist policy. But anyways, again, this is the woman that was outed for serial plagiarism or in these citations. But no, they're going to keep her on because she's a black woman. That's the bottom line. If this was a white dude, I will tell you right now, and he was caught plagiarizing, he would be gone from Harvard. And he should be. He should be fired if he was teaching at my favorite community college, which was BC3 in Butler, Pennsylvania. You can't do that. We were told as students, if you get caught plagiarizing on one of your papers, you are going to be kicked out of school. There was a zero tolerance at Cedarville University, where I hail from in Ohio. Meanwhile, the worst governor or the worst mayor in America has been hired to investigate the worst mayor in America. Lori Lightfoot, the former mayor of the city of Chicago, has been hired to investigate Tiffany Haynard, who is the mayor of a Illinois village right outside of Chicago, which this woman, Tiffany, is corrupt. I mean, and here is Tiffany, for example. Her constituents are going to these community meetings where they get an open session to talk about the corruption within Tiffany Haynard's office. Because she's money laundering, essentially, is what's happening. Anyways, here's what she had to tell her constituents at Cut One.
Them here to help each other, not hurt each other. And it's a shame that us, I'm talking about black and brown community, was sitting here.
So Tiffany there, that's the mayor that is being investigated by the other mayor, former mayor Lori Lightfoot, says that this is an attack on her as a black woman. Of course, she pulls the race card, much like Claudine Gay did over at Harvard. And there was a media uproar, and the majority of the people inside that community hall were black people that just want an honest government. But Lori Lightfoot, now hired, her new job is to investigate the leader, Tiffany. She's going to be making a whopping $400 an hour. What kind of salary is that? That's unbelievable. More on the other side. Going to be a ton of fun. Don't go away. Good morning and welcome to the morning show. Glad to have you guys joining us for a busy second hour as we are going to get some expertise on some national polling, as well as one of the most critical races in Shelby County this year. And that is the race for the clerk's race, the clerk's seat down at 201. General Sessions. The matchup is Tammy Sawyer, a race-baiting leftist, versus Lisa Arnold. Well, the guy that is behind the campaign joins us at 8:35 this morning, and excited to talk to Lane Provine about that and a lot more. And also, we're going to jump into a lot of the local issues happening across the city. One of the big stories was a downtown steakhouse closing its doors due to out of control crime. I talked to the owner yesterday on the phone, and I'm going to get him on, and we're going to jump into that story because it's unbelievable and it's sad and it's unattainable to continue doing things as we have. But first, want to now go to our phone lines. We're joined by Representative Mark White. Mark is the House Education Committee Chair and joins us by phone. Mr. White, thanks for joining the show. How are you this morning?
Doing well, Ben. Thank you. We're getting ready to have an early start here. We're starting this morning about 8:15, going through bill review, but glad to be on the show with you this morning.
Wanted to get your reaction to arguably the biggest story here in Shelby County and the surrounding areas, and that is, of course, fallen officer Joseph McKinney was shot, killed, murdered by a 18-year-old that had only been out of jail. He was arrested a month ago and then was released without bond on his own recognizance. This, to me, State Rep, is unacceptable. And I know you've been working on the Senate side with Brent Taylor to do something about this, John Gillespie as well, to make sure this never happens again.
Correct. Yeah, we keep working on, and it's difficult a lot of times when you start trying to change the laws to that affect juvenile crime. But we're getting there. We've got about another week and a half of session, but we're just about there. But that's the sad thing. You know, we can pass all the laws we want up here. And our police officers, our law enforcement, our first responders are doing everything they can to protect us. The breakdown, in my opinion, is in the judicial system that is not holding them. You know, you can pass a law, but if you can't get the judges to hold them, especially when there's multiple counts of aggravated crime by using a gun and then back out on the streets. I talked to a law enforcement out in Carville the other day, where a juvenile was shot into a lady's car trying to hijack her car. And they arrested the person out in Carville, put a $400,000 bond on the person, gets downtown, they reduce it to $25,000, and he's back down the streets. This is what has to change. And so we're trying to do everything we can on our part, but until we convince the judicial system that you're going to have to detain these people, then it's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah, I so agree with you. The solution's right in front of us, as I see it. And it's just you keep thugs in jail, violent thugs in jail. That's about as simple as it can get. And I'm over everybody going to every 14 different underlying causes. Okay, but speaking of guns and education, there is a hybrid, because I know there is a lot of controversy surrounding a bill that would allow Tennessee teachers to have guns in the classroom, drawing some mixed reaction. It's Senate Bill 1325. It passed the Senate on Tuesday. It now heads over to the House. Quick thing, have you guys taken the vote yet?
No, I think that's maybe either today or one day this week, maybe Wednesday or Thursday, but it is coming this week.
So the chair of the Memphis Shelby County School Board, Althea Green, is absolutely dead against it. And I had a gun expert on, and he said both sides need to calm down on this. Because if you think you can just walk in as a teacher and carry a firearm, no, in this legislation, Representative, it has to be signed off on the school districts, the principals, administrators. And for the folks in Shelby County screaming about this happening in our school system here, I don't know that it's as simple as the headline would suggest.
No, it's not. Nothing never is. And people on both sides of the argument make good cases. That's a really tough one for me. I, as a former principal, former school teacher, I am torn in both ways. You want to do everything you can if you're the leader, teacher or principal of a school, to protect the students in your school. And so I understand that argument. I did have a three-hour conversation with a school in Kentucky that actually had a school shooting. Went through all that turmoil, and I asked them after, I says, would you now be willing to arm teachers? And they said, absolutely not. So there's a good argument on both. I'm looking into the bill, the details, to make sure exactly what it's asking for. It's asking for 40 hours worth of training for the teacher that would do this. But having a gun on you in a school where so many things are going on, I also have concern about that. So I'm not there yet on my decision because it's a tough one.
Sure. And again, I think it is political theater by both Democrats and Republicans. I'm going to call a spade a spade. You look at it, consent ultimately will be given by local law enforcement agencies, director of schools, and principals. And for Memphis Shelby County Schools, where I know a lot of this is getting a lot of people riled up, the principals and the school district isn't going to sign off on this. So I don't know why we're really discussing it, but okay.
Yeah.
Wanted to ask about this because there is a headline, according to several legislative sources, the governor's effort to expand school vouchers, school choice in the state of Tennessee is on life support. So what is the latest in the legislative agenda and this session with this?
Yeah, and that's absolutely right from what I had. I'm the lead on that in the House as far as carrying that because I am a school choice person. However, trying to line up between what the Senate would like to see and what the House would like to see just to be able to get enough votes in the House. So that's why we put so many things in there to support our public schools, increase funding in different areas. But right now, we haven't, from what I understand, we haven't come to an agreement between the Senate and the House. And so we're down to the last 2 weeks of session. So this week will tell whether or not that bill is able to advance or not.
Very, very interesting. So it would basically, if it's not voted on in these 2 weeks, state rep, it would get tabled, maybe the governor, maybe the House, the Senate. I think for me, as someone who is trying to communicate the talking points from all of these entities, the House Speaker being on, you being on, representing the House side, and then you've got the senators, and I've had some of those on, and then the governor, there was a lot of mixed messaging. So what do you think you all would need to do going forward if you want to see more school choice programs in the volunteer state?
Yeah, I think we had to get on the same page as far as exactly what are we doing with a school choice or voucher. I think one thing we need to keep in mind, let me point this out, in our Tennessee schools, we have 1 million students, K through 12. This voucher program, or what the governor calls his Education Freedom Scholarship, is only talking about 20,000 right now. 20,000 out of 1 million. My belief is it gives those 20,000 that may need a choice where what they're currently in is not working. That's what we're trying to get at, to help all children receive the best education they can where they need that opportunity. So I don't see that affecting public schools, that small amount, but that is the discussion we're having.
All right. Can I ask you about one more bill that's interesting and also a lot of people view it as controversial? It's Republican Representative Mary Littleton. So she has this bill that would essentially, and you can correct me if I get it wrong. So if public school teachers, employees find out or say a trans student comes to them and spills all of their information, their secrets to the teachers, the bill would basically make those education officials talk to the parents under this bill. Do I have that right? Is that the gist? And if it's, go ahead.
That is correct. Yes.
So a lot of people are very upset. One of your colleagues, Democrat Representative Afton Bain, said these are the most vulnerable kids in the state who are just trying to make it in middle school out alive, and we're weaponizing the identities instead of actually passing bills that help Tennesseans. Now, this would be a bill that they would file under the slate of hate. So I'm curious to hear from you as a Republican who's got a big old bullseye on his back for being a Republican. Are all of these bills that you've been working through this session hateful bills?
No, where Chairlady Littleton's bill is coming from, there's so many things now. We've taken things out of the right of parents to know. And I understand the argument on both sides, but there are so many issues where, especially whether it be in our school systems or anywhere else, a parent should have the right to know exactly what their child is experiencing so they can help their child. Now, I know there are some issues that were the parent may be the one at fault, but we got to settle on the side of parents' right to know what is going on in their child's life.
Mm-hmm. All right, gonna leave it there. State Rep, thanks for joining the morning show. Always great catching up, and I know you're gonna be back home very soon for a little while, the summer recess. So anyways, get back to work. We appreciate all the work you're doing on behalf of us here in West Tennessee.
Thank you, Ben and Kayway. I appreciate it very much.
All right, that is Mark White, the House Education Committee Chair. Glad he dropped by. State Representative Antonio Parkinson did weigh in on this. He said Mary Littleton's bill was horrible, referring to the bill where school officials, if they're having conversations about your kid either wanting to change their sex or anything else about sexual orientation, which is a very weird thing. I had many conversations with my teacher. Miss Taylor was one of them. Another one was Miss Hosey. They were bomb. Love those ladies. Favorite teachers ever. I never talked to them about my sex. Okay. Just never came up. I'd talk about wanting to be a girl. And even if I wanted to be a girl, I don't know that my teachers would have sat down with me and had that discussion. Actually, I know they would not have. They would have picked up my dad's cell phone or picked up the phone and called my dad. And they would have said, your son wants to be identified as Betty. And my dad would get to the school and I would get spanked. These people hate us. Okay, so here's what the state rep is saying. So House Bill 2165 will force teachers to out kids who are in the closet. If the same law doesn't apply to hetero students, it's discriminating and incredibly mean-spirited. Well, hetero kids aren't in the closet. Why are we having this conversation? This is my question. Hetero, straight, gay, bisexual, pansexual, ecosexual. Why is this happening in the classroom? This should be a conversation with mom, dad, seventh grader. You know, that's what happened with me. I asked how my cousin was made, and my dad said, we're going and getting a burger. And we went and we had the talk, okay? And I learned right there. But Miss Hosey was not teaching me about the birds and the bees. So I am absolutely in favor of House Bill 2165. And if that makes me transphobic or homophobic or a bigot, well, then I guess I am, because I believe in parental rights and parents should be having those conversations. What do you make of it? Yes? No? 901-260-5926, 901-260-5926. We'll be right back. All right, so the new Tom Lee Park that's ghetto apparently now. I'm sorry it is. You go down there, I mean, it literally, you would think it was like a marijuana weed pot festival. It was, you couldn't walk through without potentially getting high yourself. And that is a crime in the state of Tennessee. Yeah. So the park, best known for its oversized otter slide and climbable salamander, reading this copy from the Daily Memphian, got a shout out on Mental Floss' list of 11 most unique playgrounds in the United States. Yes, I would agree. We are unique because not only do we've got massive otter slides, huge old climbable salamanders, but you've got 17, 15-year-olds smoking pot in salamanders and otters' tummies. It's a very unique experience down at our park. And I run through the park every single day. I'm allowed to talk about this because I'm a downtowner and I use the park probably more than anybody. Those hills that they built that obstruct the view of the river, my calves are better for it. So from the article reading here, crafted by leading artsy playground creators. This is, I guess, the name of the creator. Monstra Memphis, Tennessee's Life on the River playground is both functional and beautiful. Wow, I didn't realize that the playground had a name. So that's the name of the actual playground, the Monstrum. Oh, maybe it's because it's like little monsters, like little critters running around. Critters. In other news, in sports-related headlines. So, was it a good year for the Grizzlies? No, it was a terrible year for Grizzlies, but they are ending on a positive note. They say they are going to come back better than ever after this challenging season, that season ending with a 27-55 record. No playoff hoops in Memphis for the first time since 2020. So here's the team. You'll hear from Ja Morant, Desmond Bane, the coach, then Ja Morant again. Take a listen to this in their presser yesterday. Cut 12.
I think we can do it next season, honestly. God willing, you know, everybody stays healthy.
There's probably no more added needed motivation from forever based off this year and the year prior.
You know, with the way not just this year, but the year before, you know, kind of finished. I think we'll be back and we'll be better for sure.
You know, obviously I'm going to be, you know, sitting at home watching a couple more months here of the playoffs, and it's going to, you know, get my blood boiling. You know, it's going to be getting my mind thinking about a lot of different things.
12 is on track to be fully clear for basketball activities in June or July, and can then hopefully put a challenging year behind him.
Early on, obviously, it's tough. First time having an injury that, you know, really sat me out for a season. So that process was, you know, kind of hard. But as far as, you know, how I am mentally now, is just, you know, motivated.
All right, that coming from the Grizzlies team. In other news, got some breaking news I've got to let you know about. Memphis police are now shutting down all westbound lanes of I-240 between Airways and I-55 and I-240. Shutting it down. Not going to be able to drive it this morning. Why? Well, there was a fatal shooting on I-240 westbound near Mill Branch Road. I saw another report and I saw a photo. It looked like there was a motorcycle. Yeah, and that's what I'm getting. MPD calling for the on-ramps at both Mill Branch and Airways to be shut down to clear people off the interstate. So they're saying you've got to get off westbound I-240 as soon as you can, because you're just going to either be stuck on it or they are going to get you off ASAP. But again, the news coming in this morning investigating a fatal shooting. So someone died, and it apparently involved a motorcycle at westbound I-240 at the Elvis Presley Boulevard. Also, you could say near Mill Branch Road. So tragic news, because just another it's at this point unthinkable. I mean, now you have people unable to actually get to work this morning because of our crime. It's awful. So speaking of crime, I've got this story because a lot of our listeners are reacting to this. 117 Prime, which is a fantastic steakhouse downtown, will soon close its doors. This story in the Commercial Appeal: the restaurant will remain open this weekend, but will be closing down after dinner service on Saturday, April 20th. So if you want to get in there one last time, it must be this weekend. The downtown Memphis restaurant, from Chef Ryan Trim, who I did speak to last night, he's going to come on the show, also owns and operates Sunrise Memphis right here across from our broadcast center. They said it is set to close after it opened a while ago, and they won quite a few different awards. Back in 2023, they won the Award of Excellence for its wine program, known for its traditional steakhouse fare served with a southern spin. Anyways, wasn't enough because of crime. The owner said the decision to close was a difficult one to make, but that it had to happen. A quote here from the Commercial Appeal in their reporting: a steakhouse concept is too expensive to run in the current conditions of downtown Memphis. Mr. Trim went on to say, downtown has not felt as safe as it once did. We have found that this is steering our guests away. Are you guys steering away from downtown? That would be my question. I think some people are still going downtown, but they're not going down on weekends. I've noticed that, especially like with Wicked. But that's another point. Wicked is in town. They've been here for 2 weeks now. You've got a lot of people that still want to go enjoy the fine arts of Memphis, and that is downtown. You've got a lot of people that enjoy going to the bars, the restaurants, up and down South Main Street, North Main, down Beale, and they can't do it right now because of crime. So I'm curious to hear from you guys out there. Is crime impacting and steering you away from the tourism district? 38103 is the zip. You know, at this point, I can speak from experience. What, 2 weeks ago, I walked out and I had to be escorted by Memphis police out of my apartment because there was a shooting. A dude got shot right in front of my apartment. It's the second time now I've been involved in a crime scene. and I'm still here out of jail to tell the tale. Although I was not the assailant. No, that's not it. I just walked into the crime scene because I had to walk to my car and to keep on happening outside of my apartment. Mom, I'm fine. So a lot of our listeners writing in this morning, Rose wrote in response to this steakhouse shutting down due to crime. Can anyone blame them? Memphis leadership doesn't make an effort to see that city isn't a safe place to enjoy a meal. J.W. Miller wrote, slowly a ghost town we will be. That's sad. Actually, I don't like reading that comment. Kevin writes, no longer feel safe downtown. Have quit going to Tiger basketball games and Redbirds miss all the restaurants as well. But the thugs are running the city. Another listener wrote, take it to Nashville. Matthew Fields, who is actually the sports reporter at Channel 5, wrote, take it to Germantown. Chris wrote, I'm wanting to go to a Redbird game, but we'll only do so a week from Wednesday because it's during the day. I guess don't want to go at night. So it's tragic. And this is just one in a series. This is not the first, and this will not be the last until we make it the last business that is being forced out of downtown. It's not some decision. They are being forced out of the tourism district. It's unbelievable. All right, so real quick, before we scoot to break, heads up for the commuters. Got to get off I-240 between Airways and I-55 at I-240. Fatal shooting earlier this hour. Memphis police is shutting down all westbound lanes on I-240. That happened near Mill Branch, Elvis Presley Boulevard. You've got a person shot. When we learn more information from MPD, you'll be the first to know. It involved a motorcycle. No word on any other injuries, but right now they're just saying you've got to get off because we are shutting down those westbound lanes at I-240 between Airways and I-55, I-240. We'll be following that more on the other side with updates. Don't go away.
On air at 990 AM and 107.9 FM and online at Mighty990.com. This is the Mid-South's conservative blowtorch, KWAM.
All right, heads up. Memphis police shutting down all westbound lanes of I-240 between Airways and I-55 at I-240 due to a fatal shooting. And as promised, learning a little bit more information. Memphis police pretty tight-lipped on this one. Man was killed in a shooting on the interstate. Happened earlier this morning. A man was found dead on the scene, just on the side of the road. Police arrested another man. As I said, west two lanes are blocked. And they continue their investigation throughout the morning show. So when that opens up, we'll let you know. But right now, avoid all westbound lanes of I-240 between Airways and I-55 at I-240. Well, it is going to be here before you know it. I'm talking about November 5th, 202 days, by the way, until we as Republicans can hopefully take over the Senate, keep control of the House of Representatives, and clinch the Oval Office in November. And a great guest that is helping with that effort is the founder and president of Margin of Victory, Lane Provine. He's the founder and president. He joins us by phone this morning. Mr. Provine, what do we need to do now until November to do all of the things I just listed out?
Ben, I think it's a multifaceted approach. I think number one, Republicans' message has to focus on securing the border. I think most of us realize that's the number one issue facing us now. But closely behind number two, I think it's to unleash American energy, create prosperity, and reduce inflation. That's the first key to reducing inflation is to open up American energy, reduce energy cost, and energy cost will help to bring down the cost of everything else. Linked to that, however, is also reducing spending. We got to push a tough on crime message as Republicans. We can't have any tolerance for lawlessness. We've got to support our law enforcement officers. I think we've got to stand with Israel and stop trying to appease Iran. And I think the fifth thing we have to do is we have to as part of our message, we've got to concentrate on ending the woke madness, the obsession with race and identity. And instead, we need to be supporting excellence and merit. I think if our message is about securing the border, unleashing American energy, controlling inflation, being tough on crime, supporting Israel and standing up to a bully like Iran and kind of rebuilding our culture by ending this woke madness, this nonsense from the far left. If we can do those five things, if that's our message, then I think we can be very successful in turning the Senate red and retaining the House, building that majority and winning the presidency.
Mm, all right. So how would you grade us going into this general so far? Do you feel like there is a cohesive message? Because Democrats strategically are trying to pull all the talking points over to two things or three. And I'll actually ask you, what are their main messages? Because there's not a lot to run on, but they're going back to abortion, democracy on the ballot. And if I hear that word one more time, Lane, I'm going to lose my mind. And then three is President Trump being a criminal. So how do we avoid falling into that trap?
Well, we can't take the bait. We've got to focus on our own message, and we've got to talk about the things that are really on the minds of American voters. You know, most folks have made up their mind about Donald Trump. Most people either love him or they hate him. And there's not a lot of middle ground there. So I think what we as Republicans need to focus on so that we can win not only the presidency, but win in the U.S. Senate, and the U.S. House, and in down ballot races, are those key issues of the border, energy and inflation, crime, world affairs, and our culture. And if we'll focus on those things rather than taking the bait and talking about their message, then I think we win. But we've got to work very hard to stay on our message rather than taking the bait and talking about their message. And clearly, they've got a message they want to talk about. They can't talk about the border.
Yeah.
They can't talk about the economy. Those things are losers for them. So instead, they want to talk about Donald Trump.
Hmm. You're so right about that. So I'm curious, as someone who follows these polls, when you look at what's happening in Manhattan, where jury selection began yesterday in the New York hush money case against former President Donald Trump, do you think in this one, because as I have done my studies on this case, this looks like this will be the only one with they will get a verdict, whether it be innocent or guilty, before November. So if they do get that guilty verdict, which it appears that they will, because they, you know, it's Manhattan, do you think this influences the outcome of November? What do the polls suggest?
The polls say that it won't. A small majority of people say that a conviction of the president doesn't make any difference in the way they vote for president. 55% are saying that regardless of whether he's convicted in this Manhattan case, it's not going to influence their vote. And when you take a deep dive into all of the polling surrounding not only this trial, but the upcoming cases with the documents and the situation in Georgia, it's fascinating because what the polling shows is really a reflection about how voters feel about former President Trump in general. It's not so much about the individual cases. I think perhaps the most interesting data point I saw in a poll is that people who believe that Trump is guilty in the Georgia case or in the classified documents case or in the hush money trial, the numbers are basically the same. And it's because people are not really separating these trials out. They've already formed an opinion on whether or not they support President Trump or whether they dislike President Trump. And when voters respond to a poll about, you know, how they feel about one of these trials, really, that's a reflection about how they feel about Donald Trump in general. If they don't like Donald Trump, they probably think he's guilty in all of these cases. And if they support President Trump, then they probably feel that he is not guilty in any of these cases.
Hmm. Well, I feel a little bit better because it was rather depressed, Lane. Talking about the Trump cases, I'm always thinking worst case scenario, but you're right. I've seen that polling and maybe it won't affect these cases. I certainly hope it doesn't, because I think this is a clear sign of election interference. That's my opinion anyhow. But wanted to ask about this headline coming from the Washington Examiner, talking about Republicans not having a cohesive message on abortion. Now, this is a kicker because you're seeing the effort to get abortion on the ballot in all of these critical swing states. How do we circumvent that bait? that a lot of people are right now taking?
You know, I like President Trump's message, and you know, what he came out and said a few weeks ago is what I've been saying really from the get-go. I think that Republicans fought for 50 years to make abortion a state issue, an issue that would be decided at the state level. That's what we wanted for many years. And that's what the U.S. Supreme Court said. They said, this is a state issue. We're going to return this issue to the state. I kind of liken it to how different states have different laws on guns. And, you know, the Second Amendment gives us the right to keep and bear arms across the country, but each state regulates guns to some extent within mm-hmm. their state, whether or not you can openly carry a handgun or openly carry a long gun, the different your ability to stand your ground. I think that abortion, very similar to guns, is a state issue, and it should be decided in the individual states. And that was the message that President Trump came out with about a month ago, is that this is a state issue, and it should be decided on a state-by-state basis. And what works in Tennessee is not going to work in California. What works in Oregon is going to be very different than Alabama. And what works in South Dakota is going to be very different from what works in Maryland. And really, that's true federalism. And I think that's how more issues should be decided across the country. Unfortunately, we've got Republicans who are all over the place on this. Mm-hmm. Senator Lindsey Graham, I think, is one who is in the wrong. He's promoting a national 15-week ban on abortion, which
won't happen.
I suppose what he's trying to do is to have some middle ground. The problem with that is that no one on the right or the left likes that. If you're pro-life, you think a 15-week ban is too weak. If you support abortion, you don't want any kind of restrictions. You want unfettered access to abortion. I like President Trump's position, which to me is what the Supreme Court said in their ruling, and it's also what I believe Republicans fought for since the early 1970s, which is this is a state-by-state decision. And what we have to do, I think, as Republicans, is to have a better message in the individual states. It seems that here in Tennessee, our neighbors in Arkansas and Mississippi, we've decided that abortion is only going to be legal in the case of threat to the life of a mother. But other states are having the issue on the ballot or whatnot, in those states, I think you have to support something that will fit for your state.
Yeah. So you talked about public safety and crime being on the ballot, which leads me to my local point, which is a race where you've got a woman named Lisa Arnold, who is very familiar with the happenings down in the criminal court system, in the civil court system, 201 Poplar, all of that stuff. And she's up against a progressive, radical leftist, Tammy Sawyer. So the issue is, Lane, as you're well aware of, we don't get out the vote as Republicans and as independents in Shelby County. So what do we need to do here?
Yeah, I think in two words, what we need to do is we need to remember two words, Wanda Halbert. And
wow,
when you think about 2024, I don't think anybody's going to argue the most important office on the ballot this year is the presidential race. But the second most important office and the most important office at the local level is not going to be on the ballot in November. It is on the ballot on August 1st, and it's the General Sessions Court clerk's election. General Sessions Court in Shelby County is the largest single court system in the state of Tennessee. And General Sessions Court is the first stop for a criminal defendant when they're arrested. When a criminal is arrested and they're taken down to 201 Poplar, they go to General Sessions Court. So who we have as the General Sessions Court clerk is extremely critical because it impacts the training of the employees. And those employees are important because they're the ones who are collecting and recording information on criminals. We need somebody who is going to make sure that the employees are well-trained so they can collect accurate information, so they can record information that's accurate. And that's how we ensure that justice is served. Not everybody who has carried 201 Poplar may be guilty of the crime they're charged of. So justice works both ways. But we need a competent person in this office. And what we don't need is a situation like we have at the county clerk's office with Wanda Halbert. So if you're concerned about crime, this is the one office in this county that is on the ballot this year that you can vote for and have an impact on crime. And the choice couldn't be more stark. On one hand, you have Lisa Arnold, who has 33 years of experience in the General Sessions Clerk's Office and in the Criminal Clerk's Office. She's worked under Republican clerks and Democrat clerks, from Chris Turner to Minerva Jonick and Ed Stanton, handled a number of supervisory roles, from customer service supervisor to supervisor of the collections department and the grand jury, to managing the finance side of the operation at General Sessions Court. And she has the kind of experience, and yet I think, having been appointed by both Republicans and Democrats, demonstrates tremendous independence. That's what we need in that office. Whereas her opponent, Tammy Sawyer, I think most people are familiar with, she's a political activist. She has no experience in this office, no experience running any sort of administrative office. And when we look at the county clerk's office, where you go to get your car tag, and we see the disaster we have been dealing with for the last several years, imagine if we have that in the General Sessions Court clerk's office.
Lord.
This isn't just about judges. It's about having competent people in these administrative roles. And folks can argue all day about whether this office should be elected or not. The fact of the matter is, it is an elected office, and you have a vote, and it's on August 1st of this year. And that's not a primary for this office. That's the general election for this office. That is the Republican versus Democrat race. And frankly, I think a lot of reasonable Democrats are going to support Lisa Arnold. I think most of the independents will. Mm. But it's important that people be aware of this office. Yeah. And if crime is your number one concern in Memphis and Shelby County, then the number one race that ought to be on your mind is on August 1st, and that is this General Sessions Court Clerk's race.
Well said. Thanks for laying that out. Really do appreciate that. And another important date to write down is Friday, May 3rd, because Lane Provine, our guest on our phone line, is going to be joining the folks out at the Collierville VFW at the Get Out the Vote speaker series, and Lane will actually be headlining for that. So we'll get out there and support you, Lane. Appreciate you dropping by. You guys can follow Lane on Twitter. That is LAYNE Provine. Thanks for dropping by. All right, more on the other side. Don't go away. The audacity for these soft on crime, get out of jail free card activists that have commandeered a lot of our offices in town. Speaking of one of them, I've had quite a few people send this over to me. So this is the executive director of Just City. They are the organizers, the activists that are responsible, along with crooked Judge Bill Anderson and all of the crooked judicial commissioners, that created the new bail hearing room, which is you get out of jail. Even if you're a violent thug, those thugs kill cops. And what do the activists do? They run to the nearest TV camera and have the audacity to talk to them. Blood is on your hands, so shut up. That's the least you could do. So here is Josh Spickler. He's a radical. Cut 19.
Just a tragic, tragic set of circumstances. But there was nothing that judicial commissioner could have known or could have done differently, or would have known and would have done differently, and probably did make that decision, that same decision, hundreds of times before.
People reoffending in violent crime cases, executive director of Just City, Josh Spickler, says doesn't happen often. Just City says their data shows the reoffense rate for violent crimes from February 17th, 2023 to February 2nd, 2024 is 1.5%, a 0.5% decrease from pre-bail hearing room data from January 2021 to February 16th, 2023.
This is a rare event, and there's not much we can do about it except just continue to do what we're doing, make good decisions based on the data that's available, and that's what the commissioner did.
He's horrible. He's an old white dude that has this weird obsession this fixation on black people being discriminated against by Bell. That's his entire, that's the reason that he has a heartbeat. And he says that the reoffending, the violent offenders that are getting back out and reoffending, those numbers are dropping. Those cases, they're just not frequent. What we saw over the weekend was the exception and not the rule. Oh, oh, how dishonest you are. Seek God, Josh. All right, real quick, I had this story that I wanted to share. We're going to play the package. I think we have time for it. So without further ado, you've got this local teacher, and she is a part-time Uber driver to help make ends meet when this happened. Take a listen. It's so sad. Cut 13.
Once I seen the gun, I was like, you know what? It's not worth it. You can have it. Take it.
LaShondra Cox says Sunday morning, she almost took the last ride of her life after a pair of young thieves called for an Uber ride around 1:40 a.m. in the Oak Haven area and shortly after robbed her.
It was just a crazy incident.
According to Cox, she was about to call it a night before she accepted the request on Ashwood Street.
I picked up two individuals, a female and a male. And I called out to the female, and she responded that her name was John, or she was for the John ride. And so they got in the car.
Cox says during the 11-minute ride to Whitehaven, the woman in the back of her 2020 silver Honda Accord started questioning her about the condition of her car, uh-oh, raising red flags.
Oh, no. Then she asked me about tracking. And she was like, is there a tracking system in here? I was like, yeah, you can get one in your car. She was like, is there one in here? Do you have one?
Cox says when she drove to the area on Danbury Avenue to drop them off, both exited the vehicle. And she says the man pulled a gun on her and told her to get out.
I tried to grab my keys and my phone, but he was like, no, leave that too. And so I was like, please don't shoot me. Just don't shoot me. You can have the car.
Cox says she ran for help, leaving everything behind, including her gun, which was in the glove department. She says the thieves took off with her vehicle, which she used to support her family.
So I'm an educator, teacher, and so I was suffering.
The teacher there goes ahead and she loses her only mode of transportation to make ends meet. She's a teacher, and she was a part-time teacher, and she had to Uber, and the passenger stole her car. It's so sad, so messed up. We're going to take a break and see you guys tomorrow morning. By the way, Matthew Barton, the district attorney of DeSoto County, will be live in studio tomorrow morning. Don't miss it.